Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hello, and welcome to Beyond the Noise, the podcast series from PR Week. I'm John Harrington, the editor of PR Week UK, and your host today. I'm joined by PR Week news editor Siobhan Holt. Hi, Siobhan.
Hi, John.
Our special guest this week is James Crawford, Managing Director of PR Agency One. Hi, James. Good to see you.
Good to see you, too.
How are things, firstly? How's business? How's life?
Pretty well. It's been, as you know, it's been a challenging couple of years for most people, but we seem to be getting through it and doing okay. I feel like H2 is going to be a strong trading period.
Good, good. Well, fingers crossed for all of that. And thank you so much for coming on board. So, going to get on to the topic today. We've all heard horror stories in recent times of poor behaviour from clients, you know, whether that's late payments, ghosting, unrealistic expectations, that sort of thing. On the flip side, clients could say, well, agencies aren't perfect themselves, and maybe we need to set out expectations for them too. So last week, the PRCA released an updated version of its client consultancy partnership charter to help improve client-agency relationships. James is a fellow of the PRCA and was among the people behind the updated charter, and he's here to talk about it. But before we start, I'd like to give a plug for some upcoming PR Week events happening this spring. The PharmaComms Conference is a must-attend event for anyone in healthcare or pharma PR. It's taking place on the 21st of March. We have Influencer 360 on 10th of April and PR Week's biggest conference of the year, PR 360, in Brighton on 8th and 9th of May. Don't miss out. Okay, on to the questions. I wanted to start with a bit of background, really. Can you just sort of explain, James, the background to the new charter, why we have an update now and when the work started, I guess?
Yeah, so the PR and Comms Professional Board, which back in 2022, people might know it as the PRCA Council, decide each year on three topics facing the industry, for example, AI and things like that. And the charter was chosen, I think, we think as early as 2022. And the PRCA reviews all its codes and charts from time to time. And I think the decision was made to update it to reflect the changes that are happening in the industry.
Great. So who's been involved in it? What's been the sort of process of getting the update together?
You're going to put me on the spot there with names. There's been a cast of thousands of the great and the good been involved in writing this. But Richard Fernandez, who's the head of external relations at the PRCA, has been leading it, bringing in great practitioners. I think there is Rob Colmer, who's from luxury car brand Aston Martin. How did I forget that? And also Claire Williamson of Resonance were involved in the section that I was involved in. But as I said, so many people have contributed to this that it would be remiss of me to pick on a few names. It really has been a big consultative project, and it's been excellently handled by the PRCA. It's just one of those projects that underpins everything that we do as an industry, I think. When this charter came out, I can remember referring to it when I first started out, I think. And it's, now as a managing director, I look upon it from a different perspective in terms of a quality handbook, a framework to help us build better relationships with clients.
You say there that you've been using it for a long time, but how would you say then the charter works exactly?
So the charter is, other guys within the PRC might say differently, but for us, it's a flexible framework that we adopt across the business. And it's designed to be that, because every PR business is different and every client is different. If you want to be more robust with some of the principles in the charter, you can do the PRCA Communications Management Standard, which is a quality process which you get audited on. And we've done that as well, and it really helps to improve professionalism. And I think just going through the process with the entire team just makes them think more broadly about what they're doing. And they put their head up from the job list, which is very long because I've made it so, and makes them think more broadly about the business and their relationships and why they're doing what they're doing. So yeah, the charter itself, it's public, so anybody can abide by it. But if you want to kind of push it a little bit further, I think Communication Management Standard is a great complementary process to go through.
Right. So there's no kind of formal process then related to the charter. There's no sense.
It's signed in blood. You have to go into a room, swear to the PR god. It's very flexible. It's designed to be like that because every business is different, and I think you might have picked up on the language in places is designed to be a bit more open-ended than too prescriptive. But that I think that works because I've worked in many PR businesses, client side and mainly agency side, and they're all different and everybody does things differently.
Great. Well, thank you for that. Let's get on to some of the main changes, really. And one of the most striking ones is the new section on AI. Can you give us a bit of information about what that says?
So I wrote that section, so hopefully I can give you the lowdown on it. I approached the PRCA last year sometime because I felt that there wasn't really a one-size-fits-all approach, and arguably there shouldn't be a one-size-fits-all approach, but I wanted to address a few key issues to help kind of clients maybe relax a little bit about AI's use, but also help companies adopt it and steer their way through it. I think we've all been following Andrew Bruce-Smith, who is AI god, I refer to him in our agency. He's been very instrumental in helping share and set standards across the agency and client side. But we wanted to just formulate a few things. Originally, I wrote it as a policy for my company, and when I felt that there wasn't something sort of industry-wide, I wanted to try and share that with the PRCA, and it got incorporated into the charter, which was great. So it covers everything from transparency being a really big one. There's no shame in using AI. I think everyone's using it now. Maybe in the early days people weren't as transparent as they could be around it. People should be transparent on its uses, and also from a privacy perspective, privacy needs to be addressed. People shouldn't be putting client-sensitive information into AIs that aren't set around some sort of private... If the privacy within that particular tool isn't set to be completely private, then definitely no private information should be put into that. With ChatGPT, you can upload databases and spreadsheets and CSVs and ask it questions like a data analyst. And, again, there's got to be some serious transparency there about how certain data is going to be used, because there are concerns that data would be used for training the AI, although some of the AIs are saying they're not doing that now. So transparency is the key there. Misinformation was another one, I think, and it's something that's definitely not been tackled, but we're asking people not to use AI for misinformation and deepfakes and all those horrible things that I think we're going to see over the next few months and years with the various elections that are coming up. And then diversity and inclusion as well. We've seen a number of examples where AIs have either gone too far one way or another to either not include or to over favor certain audiences. You've got to use your brain really to figure out whether this is a true representation of what's being said. Now it covers quite a lot. It's not prescriptive. It is flexible, and hopefully it will get people, if they're not already experimenting and setting up processes with AI, starting to set up processes, because there are some really great ways to strip out time-consuming jobs within agencies and to standardise certain tasks and hopefully improve productivity on a grand scale.
When I was looking at it, one part that really struck me was the bit committing clients to not utilising ideas from consultants or consultancies, where we do not award the work to those consultants or consultancies, which is obviously a reference to IP theft. How bad is that as a problem?
I don't think there's any particular data on how widespread this is, but there have been concerns raised to the PRCA, and this was a way to address it. We've seen it happen to us, but it can be hard to prove, can't it? An idea is an idea. They could have had the idea 2 or 3 weeks before you. So it's just an acknowledgement, really, that you can't just run off with these ideas, and to support those consultancies and agencies that feel that they have been wronged. And if anyone's particularly litigious, perhaps they could refer to the charter, but I don't know how far that would actually get them. I'm not a lawyer. So yeah, it's one of those areas that there isn't any data to sort of back up how widespread it is, but it has been noted by the PRCA, and that's why it's been included in this particular update.
Okay, we'll be talking about transparency, diversity and more in a moment. But before that, here's a message from our partners.
Did you know that 1 in 6 species in Great Britain are at risk of extinction? My name is James Ajapong Parsons, and I'm the producer of The Eco Chamber, a weekly podcast that investigates the deep-rooted issues facing our country's natural environment and the policy that underpins them. We give you the facts, insights, and exclusives that no other podcast can. The Eco Chamber, digging deep into stories that matter. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, there's a lot about transparency in the charter, which is interesting. You know, the whole thing about keeping both sides informed, very important. Why was that such a focus? We've all heard about ghosting after pitches as well, which I think is sort of maybe linked to this. It'd be good to reflect a little bit on that and some of the other issues around lack of transparency and so on.
Yeah, so transparency touches many, many points, really, but I think the kind of underlying driver behind it is to keep communication going between clients and agencies. Transparency helps avoid disputes. Disputes can be costly, can lead to invoices not being paid, legal action, so on and so forth. So with transparency, disputes can be solved, hopefully you can avoid paying those pesky lawyers hard and fee income, really. But also, transparency is important, across the board, be it to do with diversity or, like when in the AI piece, disclosing how you do things. Clearly, you don't want to give away your crown jewels and your IP, but, talking to clients about budgets, for example, is in there, isn't it? About if you're managing and handling a client's budget, being able to report on that. Time, the classic challenge for any agency and entrepreneur, again, is another area where transparency could be key to keep it on top of over-servicing. In summary, it's just a key component for a healthy relationship, I think. Ask my fiancé.
Talking of sort of topics that cropped up quite a few times in the charter, diversity did several times, actually. Could you talk a bit more about that element, and also what would you like clients and agencies to do on that?
I want to say guide. It's probably got a proper term. I'm not very good with definition, an official title. If you search for that, it comes up, I promise you. And in there's everything you might need to know about diversity. So, we're a relatively sort of medium-sized agency. I think larger agencies have got specialised people who just focus purely on it, and that's great if you've got the resources. And so, for large or small agencies, or even, I should keep focusing on agencies from agency, client side members of the PRCA too, everything's in there. I think a big part of it, having read it earlier, to refresh my memory, is about measurement and being able to measure your demographic makeup of your business, looking at your recruitment processes, so on and so forth, really track how you're doing, and to be able to report on, all sorts of things. We have a staff survey where we ask about happiness and standards and all sorts of things in there. We measure certain key stats on diversity and try to action them as best we can. One of the areas that I couldn't see in that guide was kind of socioeconomic diversity. Things like Socially Mobile, the WOBS project, they have started to help talent emerge into the PR industry from poorer sections of society. So I think that that's definitely an area that I'd like to see move forward. Probably have a word with the powers that be on that one. But generally speaking, it does cover a lot of bases, and the whole diversity and inclusion peace has moved on so much in the last 5 years. Hopefully over the next few years, it's not going to kind of row backwards. But I feel the guiding principles that are in that document make sense. And hopefully we can make the PR industry a more inclusive place for everybody.
Yeah. Are there any sort of specific parts of that element around diversity that you could talk about where things have maybe changed or been adapted or added?
I think it is a new addition to the charter. I might be wrong. I don't know if you had the look to sit through our podcast seminar on Friday. We did a top 20 countdown of new additions and diversity inclusion was in there. So could be wrong, and have sometimes been, but it's a completely new addition. So I think that's a great thing to see. And there's separate documentation on it. And I think a lot of people get a bit scared about diversity inclusion. I do sometimes forget my acronyms and things like that. But I think generally speaking, if you've got your principles right and you're working towards some goals and you've got some people in your business who are dedicated to it, you'll be on the right lines. And I'm just glad that it's been added into this update of the charter.
Great, thank you. I mean, I guess we have heard some criticism. I mean, one agency boss was sort of saying to me that the language could look a bit non-committal. So for example, it asked clients to consider adjustments to consultancy fees and rates in annual reviews, looking at things like inflation, consider rather than actually definitely do something. Why isn't the language a bit stronger in places?
Yeah, well, I think because it is a framework and because so many businesses are different, it could be in certain situations a bit strange to prescribe, say, you must review your fees every year. I mean, I'd love it if we did have but only fee reviews every year. So it is an advisory piece. And, you know, I think maybe the PRCA communications management standard maybe goes a bit further in terms of looking at documentation, things you've done there. And you're right, you know, you could go further. We could get the big stick out and, you know, try and bludgeon people to death with rules and regulations and things. But I don't think that's in the spirit of the document. It is a guidance. But I hear what they're saying. I hear that criticism and I take it on board. And it was definitely something I think that I mentioned it to Richard, the PRC, earlier. And I'm sure when they review this again, some of the wording will be reviewed and you know, that point will be taken on board.
I mean, one specific thing kind of linked to this is the sort of lack of commitment on payment terms. And I heard that there was also a concern around contracts, that basically this is something for a contract between one party and another, i.e. a client and a consultancy. Was that a sort of factor as well when it comes to sort of being too prescriptive, that some of these things, particularly when it comes to payment terms, are about the contract between two parties and this is not a signed contract. This is a sort of an agreement to act in a certain spirit, really.
Yeah, it's certainly not a contract. It is something that agencies and clients can bring into the pitch process, the tender process, the briefing process. They might want to refer to it, link to it. We always have a way of working section in our proposals. And I think we talk about the communications management standard and that. I think we can mention the charter and refer to it. And hopefully some clients will read it and think, oh, that makes sense. Maybe it'll raise some points that they've not thought of before. So is it contractual? Yeah, it's not really a contractual thing. Some of the elements it touches on obviously do link to employment law and contract law and things like that. But no, it's not. Definitely not a contract. Not sure how well it would stand up in a course of law if both parties signed it. But yeah, it's an advisory piece, and hopefully it will lead to just longer lasting, better relationships between clients and agencies. And it's that dispute resolution piece, and handling disputes that occur. The transparency thing is really important. I think the classic one in agencies is, you know, when somebody moves on, it's always a pain. You've got to speak to the client and, you know, it's important to be transparent about what the person's doing and where they're going and what you're doing to remedy it, you know. So, yeah, it's just a way of living rather than a contract.
And were there any other parts of the charter that stood out to you that people should know about?
Yes. There were front of mind has to be the inclusion of the AMEC framework in the measurement and evaluation section. Obviously, with my I met board member Hassan. It would be remiss of me not to give that one a plug. It is a very useful tool for measuring what we do, and it's available, again, a bit like the charter. It's a framework that you can all apply and use. That is essential. There was also a rewrite of an update to objectives, making sure that objectives and measurement is addressed at the very start of a campaign. There is a tendency, there has been, I won't name any names, there has been a tendency sometimes for people to wheel in measurement and data people at the end of the campaign, say, well, measure this for me, guys, without actually thinking about what those objectives are at the very beginning, and why you're up to doing what you're doing. So, you know, getting those objectives set at the beginning and thinking not just about the communication objectives, but the business outcomes that you're looking to achieve is an essential one. And then thinking crucially how you can measure that, because those things aren't always that easy to measure. So yeah, I would point to those two updates. And guys who've worked on the top 20 countdown are going to kill me for the other 15 that I haven't mentioned, but I'm sure we can have a discussion online when this goes live.
I want to kind of ask us a kind of general question now. I mean, obviously, while this process was going on, you'd have spoken to a lot of people, get a lot of feedback about where the issues are and what maybe needs to change. Did you get the sense that, in general terms, client-agency relationships have got more strained, they've got more complicated, you know, maybe they've got worse, maybe they've actually got a bit better?
Yeah, I do. It's a big question. And I'd say the big tipping point, obviously, was COVID, wasn't it? Where, you know, we would probably spend millions of pounds on trains and planes and automobiles flying around to meet people, spending great quality time, mm-hmm. having meetings and face-to-face things. And, you know, now we can jump on a Zoom and meet. I've met 8 people in one day once. Really bad idea. Far too many. But, you know, you can do that if you want to do it. And what that means, there is a bit of a degradation of the quality of relationships in certain places. And that's got to be addressed. I think it is. I think, you know, we try to meet clients face-to-face at least once a quarter. And then the other bit that's quite interesting is the PR relationships. The client can be lots of different things. So you've got clients who are PR practitioners or marketing directors who've maybe managed agencies for a long period of time, but increasingly over time, we've seen, you know, SEO and e-commerce and performance marketers, you know, managing PR for digital marketing purposes, for SEO purposes, and they, you know, they procure PR in a different way. They see it as a, you know, how many links you're getting. That's kind of how they quantify success. And in some of those relationships, it's moving further and further down the value chain where it's becoming very transactional. So, yeah, you mentioned ghosting. I'd say maybe I've had, I don't know, a good 10 or 20 conversations with agency heads and people about this. That, you know, you sometimes get an inquiry in, they sound like they want to even speak to you, and then you don't hear back and you chase that one up. Or the worst ones are, of course, because it's fine when that's just a lead, unqualified lead. The worst ones are where you've qualified the lead and you've done proposals and you put those proposals in and you just don't hear back, and you chase it up and you phone them and you email them. And these days, you know, when you phone up a company, it used to be you'd always get through to someone, but there's, because the people are working from home, there's that extra barrier, isn't there, to get hold of people. I think some people can hide away for that, so that's definitely something that's changed for the worse, I would say. So yeah, having the charter, if you can have that conversation with people early doors, maybe will help reduce that and create, you know, genuine real world relationships. Because once you've met someone and you want to, you just want some feedback. Yeah, if you've done a great job, you get some great feedback. You've done a great job. If you had a stinker, it's good to know. You know, not having any feedback is the worst feeling. And then I think the other thing that's happened in the last few years because of the economy, maybe since the Ukraine war, just is the, you know, the chopping and changing. So we've had a pitch, big international pitch, for a brand that I won't mention, who had a big pitch process. We did the pitch, we brought in our partners from the US, got down to the second round, and then decided they're just not going to do it. You know, that's understandably, you know, things change in businesses. And then other examples have been not just around clients kind of changing their mind because of the economy, you know, people being made redundant. Probably had 3 or 4 examples of that over the past 2 years where you're in a pitch process and somebody just disappears, which is... Yeah, it's definitely, you know, that's been a thing. So, yeah, it's classic, isn't it, with recession. I think that's it gets a little bit more challenging. And I was speaking to somebody, I won't mention her name, who did a big pitch to a really big, I might not even mention the sector, and they had a deadline to pitch to, spent, you know, weeks of time doing it, And then they submit it on deadline. The client went on holiday for 2 weeks. Oh. So, you know, that hopefully that sort of thing, if you've got a good relationship, I mean, it happens, doesn't it? Hopefully by talking to people and being transparent and being a bit more human about it and not just being a little window on a Zoom call, we can start to move relationships back up that value chain.
Yeah, I really hope so. Thank you. And I guess the final thing is sort of what's next, really? Are there plans to have kind of feedback once the charter is in use, and what sort of shape do you think that might take? Or is this something where you kind of park it for now, take it up in a few years? Because it's obviously been a lot of work, I'm sure.
Well, you're speaking to the wrong guy, sadly, for that question. I couldn't actually answer that, honestly. But, I mean, an obvious point of view is that now the communications management standard needs an update. If that is measuring things around the charter, I think that probably needs an update. I don't want to give what was the PRCA Council another job to do, but I'd imagine that's next on the to-do list. Maybe it's not, but hopefully you'll get a refresh.
So that's all the time we have today. Thanks so much to James for joining us and taking us through the new charter. Before we go, I'd like to plug a few PR Week awards. 30 Under 30, our annual search for the Young Stars of UK PR, is open for entries. You can also enter the PR Week UK Awards. That's our biggest awards event of the year, if you don't know, and a seminal moment in the industry's calendar, if I do say so myself. So don't miss out. And if you enjoyed today's episode, then we'd love it if you could leave a review, please, wherever you access PR Week's Beyond the Noise podcast. Thank you for listening. Until next time, goodbye.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences, whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets. Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Welcome to Sincerely Sloan, presented by Uninterrupted. I'm your host, professional tennis player, wife, parent, and entrepreneur, Sloan Stevens. As an athlete and as a person, my journey has had a lot of twists and turns, from moments of adversity and doubt to unimaginable triumph and satisfaction. Throughout the season, I'm joined by some of the biggest names in sports, entertainment, culture, and a few members of my tribe. Our conversations keep it real and push it past skin deep. We reveal the perspectives, routines, and products that allow each of us to show up at our best. Join me on my journey of self-discovery and many, many laughs along the way. Sincerely, Sloan.